Oh, just like now with you know, Sanders and Warren and others, the so-called left. And you got McGovern was put up as the candidate, right? In 72, was it? I think it was 72.
Yep,
check my chronology.
Nixon, yep.
And he was for peace. Now, McGovern was no socialist, but he had a left-wing program. And also, at the height of the 60s and 70s, you had right-wingers like Nixon forced to implement less, you know, progressive policies like abortion rights, like environmental rights, you know, and the Environmental Protection Agency, you know, workers' rights. You had all these so-called liberal, so-called progressive things in the midst of a conservative administration with a conservative Supreme Court actually forced in to come into existence, at least temporarily. Now you see how abortion rights are under attack
there
now.
There you go. I was just thinking about that. Yeah. That with a whole case of Missouri. Yeah. Missouri. I don't know how you pronounce it. Missouri.
I hope not.
Now it's a debate. Now it's like a debate. It's a fight, you know?
Yeah, and also it's a fight after...
So that
it's a
shows
fight
how
after
these little concessions are not permanent.
Yeah. But it's also a fight that happened with people voting Democrat at the time. The best the new left, quote unquote, could come up with in the 60s and 70s was voting Democrat. You fools. Now, I don't say they all believe that. There were even union people back then talking about Labor Party and stuff. We found out we were organizing Labor Party in the 90s. We'd run into people that say, ever since the 70s, we've had a group in the union talking about the need for a Labor Party.
When I heard Joe Biden was invited when the victory of the workers was Stop and Shop.
That was horrible.
I said, who did you invite?
The labor leaders have wasted millions of our union dues on carrying water for the Democratic Party, which is a capitalist party, which is a corporate political party. It's a sin. And we're paying for it every day. Every day we don't have a workers' party. Every day we don't have a decent federal minimum wage. We're paying with our blood. Every day we don't have national health care. Oh, did you hear that thing on the national propaganda radio yesterday? And this was just the tip of the iceberg. Apparently there's articles about it in ProPublica or something. Anyway, so there's this church, United Methodist Church. Don't get me started on all the different religious sectarian groups. I don't even want to go there. But so you have this thing called the United Methodist Church, right? Protestant, I guess. They have all the rhetoric about caring about poor people and all that. And Jesus said this and that, right? By the way, I don't think there was a Jesus, but that's another thing. Yeah. So,
Are they the ones that go as far as to say Jesus was a socialist?
Before there was capitalism. Listen, Jesus could not be a socialist. There was no capitalism. I'm sorry about that.
It was feudalist society.
Slave society, yeah.
No. Doesn't register.
But
I don't think capitalism even existed. No.
So the United Methodist Church owns a hospital. And other healthcare facilities in a big city in the South. I forget which one, Memphis or somewhere. And they subcontract or actually own a bill collecting agency that is known as one of the most vicious bill collecting agencies in the country. And somehow they have a law. I'm not sure if it's federal or state. They can actually garnish wages at the end of the whole thing. So there's all these poor people that have gone into working class people, not even poor people. Poor people are working class people, but you know what I mean? I'm trying to say even people that made a good wage went into this hospital for treatment and then got these enormous bills. Like, I just got a bill for $50 for a CT scan. I'm in a union with a healthcare plan and it still sucks, right? What about people that aren't in unions with no healthcare plan? And I'm not making a lesser evilism argument. I hate the fact that I have to pay $50 and I'm resisting it. And I hate my unionship for giving concessions they didn't need to, right? But, here's this place, back to Memphis, back to this article that was talked about on national propaganda radio. They are going after people so viciously and so many that it's become a big story, because there's people that have been driven into poverty and have their wages still garnished, still taken. Garnished is a nice word for taken. Garnished sounds like you sprinkle some paprika on it.
Let me garnish that check. Hold on. Let me garnish that.
Let's garnish your lifestyle with some acid. You know. Anyway, it's we got to give we're WMFO Medford. That's WMFO in Medford, also known as Tufts Free Form Commercial Free Community Based Radio at 91.5 FM. WMFO in Medford. Also known as Tufts Educational Radio. This is our legal ID and some extra sprinkles.
How would George Carlin...
Extra garnish.
How would George Carlin take down garnish? What is that all about? What?
I miss
pre this, pre that.
I miss George Carlin. I miss the late George Carlin. George Carlin was an example. You know how they say everyone turns more conservative when they get older? That's bull. I don't think that's true at all.
He became more of a nihilist.
He got more. Well, he got less conservative. He was also a nihilist. You're right.
Yeah. But he didn't care what you thought. You know.
He got less conservative though. That's for sure. I mean, he used to like actually co-host the Tonight Show back in like the 60s.
That's
or 70s.
How he started, right?
Well, no, he was already kind of famous. I think he was already kind of famous.
Seven words.
I think he was famous for that. He was doing the Tonight Show. As long as he didn't say the seven words, they let him do it. But what I'm trying to say is that he was more mainstream. That's all I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Then he went, like, they wouldn't put on the stuff he said about big business, which I can't even say over the air.
During the first Iraq war, what was it, the Desert Storm, he went
nuts on them?
Oh, my God. He's like, he was talking about how, you know, war is just a whole guys with their big, you know what, back and forth. Remember that?
Yeah, because he's...
Yeah. You can't say it on air, but...
No, those last things he said, those last... I don't know if they were turned into albums or they were just bits of his monologues, but...
He gets into Bush.
Bush had
to defend his masculinity, you know? Like,
yeah. But he
just think of the word Bush.
Yeah, he puts these things, like, in categories that are spot on. Like, he's at big business, then he does 5 minutes... or whatever, on big business. And it's
they don't give up.
Yeah, we're not in their club. Then he's like the American dream. Then he's like religion. It's like boom, 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 boom. Like major artillery, you know? Amazing. But anyway, now I've lost my train of thought. We were talking about, so this Methodist hospital in the South, and I don't mean, to, you know, this could be happening in the North too. I'm sure it is. They have such an aggressive collection agency that it's made headlines in certain places. And you wouldn't believe some of the stories, like, you know, and the church just wouldn't respond. The church hierarchy wouldn't respond. They would respond with boilerplate, like liberal talk. We care about poor people. Blah, 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 blah. And meanwhile, they're driving people into poverty, into just outright. I mean, people probably killed themselves over it. Sort of goes back again. I know I referenced this movie a lot, but. And Michael Moore stinks now. I don't like his stuff. He just likes Democrats now. But he did that movie Sicko, again, about, which we mentioned on the show many times, that was about people with insurance, by the way. But then the insurance wouldn't cover anything. So the corporate media is finally like, here it is a decade or more later, the corporate media is finally saying like things like, here's a sentence they use. As more and more health insurance companies are that corporations use, or I'm not saying this right, corporations implementing healthcare plans for their workers, quote unquote, are also implementing higher co-pays, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and they use those words, co-pays and everything, which basically means higher fees, higher cost out of your paycheck every week or 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's been happening consistently. But now it's like hitting, like they're finding new ways to like new things they're going after that they didn't used to, at least for me. And again, it's relative. Like, I think we talked about this the last show, the sort of race to the bottom mentality that a lot of Americans have. Like, if I say I have a $25 copay, someone will say I've got $35.
Oh, that's not bad. Yeah. It's not that bad.
Yeah. Mine's 35.
It could be worse.
Mine's 40. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Whereas it used to be
that's like
five
if I go to an emergency room where I work in the hospital, I work in the hospital.
Yep.
Emergency room. I'm dying. $150.
Yeah. Mine's $100.
Copayment.
Mine's $100. And I
just
had a doctor.
Just to go there. That's not even diagnosing what does he have. What is he dying of?
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
No.
$150. I know.
Just to come in.
I walked in to a doctor, urgent care doctor, under my health care plan. I had to go to a certain place, of course. I had swelling under my neck that was really weird, big. And the doctors, this is how good my medical care is, by this is Atrius, which is now owned by CVS, I guess, or Aetna or something. I don't know. I get those confused. It's one of the big corporations. Doctor looks and says, I never saw anything like that before. You should go to the emergency room. Well, number one, thanks, doc. I hope the 8 years of medical school was worth it for you because it's not for me. And secondly, that cost me $100, so I really don't want to do that. So I go back and forth. Thankfully, there was a nurse there. Nurses are so much better than doctors. I can't even want to get into it.
It should be all nurses.
So the nurse was, yeah. The
doctors
nurse,
walk around. Yeah. I've seen this thing where the doctor's like, there was a guy who was having a little chest something.
Oh, God. And I don't want to hear this story.
Oh, my God. No, I'm ringing in, you know, because, of course, this is capitalism. You know, it's a service, food service.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm ringing in this customer. Yeah. This guy over here is having this like.
Oh, no. Oh my
you know,
God.
That kind of thing.
Oh, my
and
God.
And instead of the doctor, who I'm ringing in, you know, instead of him saying Cole Blue, oh, let me go and check him out, he's like, yeah, call Cole Blue and have this man checked out. He walks away, pays, and just keeps on going like he's God.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they think they're this...
good one.
Where a nurse would have been like, nurses are like...
Yeah.
Oh, are you okay? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, one day I had a Charlie horse, you know, because I'm sitting down in this chair.
Yeah.
You know, and you get that little Charlie horse.
Yeah.
You know what that is, right? The muscle.
I know what it is, yep.
All right. And I did this...
Oh, by the way, growing up, Charlie horse was when someone hit you as hard as they could.
And a nurse literally was about to call Cole Blue.
Uh-huh, okay.
You know, are you okay? She thought I was having a heart attack. No, it's just a Charlie horse. You know, it's like...
Yeah.
You know, but...
Well, I had, you know, I've got two kids. I was at both births. The doctors were horrible. Well, one doctor was horrible. One doctor was actually okay. But the other, even the one that was okay, wasn't there that much. Who was there holding our hands? Who was there?
Nurses.
With the knowledge?
The nurses.
Before, during, and after? The nurses. The doctors came in, thought their job was to yell at people. And because I don't want to mess anything up, I didn't even respond. And normally, if anyone yells at me, I respond pretty quickly.
That's like the guy that gave me the cortisone shot.
Yeah.
He the nurse does everything, you know, takes
five,
how much do you weigh, blah, 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 all the, you know, okay, he'll be right in. I'm thinking this is hers, she's going to take care of me. No. He'll be right in, you know. Of course, they take their sweet time.
Oh, yeah.
No, you're not.
That's not necessarily their fault, because I've talked to a doctor that I was sympathetic with, and it seemed pretty good. And he told me, like, the inside story, which is basically and I've read this, too. They allocate time for them now. Doctors should be unionized. Any doctor that's not in a union is crazy.
What does allocate?
It means 15 minutes per patient. You can't go over that. If you do, you got to justify it somehow.
What?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You should read about this. It's even worse than that. What about surgeons doing two surgeries at once? Man. You've heard about this? Surgeons doing two surgeries at once to save money for the hospital?
Oh.
That's a big thing now.
That can kill people.
Of course. It has. Yeah. Maybe it's even more than two. I don't know. Oh, it's horrible. The healthcare system in this country is complete crap. I'll just finish
this. Was it a brain transplant? Oh, my God. I forgot now. I'm doing two at the same time.
Is it the liver or the brain? I can't remember. But my thing was...
this guy comes in. He goes like, okay.
Which one is this? The cortisone shot?
Yeah, he comes in. He's like, what can I do you for? I'm like, what am I? Car? What can I do you for?
Yeah,
like,
sell me a car.
You know, like, what can I...
I'm sell hurting. Me health.
I need help.
Yeah.
And then he's like, okay, I need an x-ray to x-ray.
I don't know why I'm laughing,
you have
man.
This. You have that. You're off or, you know, kind of like this. And I'm like, okay, great. That's all I need to know. Yeah. Is this going to be a surgery thing? No. I don't think it's surgery yet. But, you know, and then the cortisone thing, I was like, great. Which I feel great now. But
this is the kind of thing where...
That may be one of these things that wear off.
This is the kind of thing where you laugh or you cry. We should all be crying, but we laugh about it.
We're laughing, but we're crying inside, you know?
The thing I had, right? The thing that I wanted to say about my thing was just that, back to the cost, right? So I argued with this doctor and this nurse, although she was a lot better about it, said, you know, I have to pay $100 to walk to an emergency room. I can't afford that. I don't want to do that. There must be a better way. Urgent care system you have. There must be a way I can just go see, get a CT scan or whatever they call them. I guess it was CT. They call it CT. I don't know. And it turned out to be that thing where you just go into the tunnel with the don't move, that thing.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Don't move. Don't scratch. Of course, the minute they say that, all you can do is scratch.
Yeah, the minute you say that, now.
When you say don't move, your leg starts twitching. So anyway, I go through that. And then we had this elaborate plan. They said, go to this hospital. It's open. Radiology is open in this hospital. Don't stop at the emergency room. I'm like, my co-conspirators. I'm not going to stop at the emergency room. Yeah. So I go directly to radiology. I don't stop at the emergency room. And no one's talking money. I say up front, I can't afford anything. They said I could do this for free. They said, oh, yeah, no problem. Then I get a bill in the mail later for this simple thing. It took... really short time once they got around to it. I was the only one there, but they still took their time.
Yeah.
Then I got the CT thing done, and it wasn't a serious thing, and blah, blah, you know? So it was all very quick once the ball got rolling, but then I get a bill, $50, half what it would have been to go to the emergency room, $50. And I've just been ignoring it. Now each letter gets more threatening and all that, and I got to, you know, argue, and I'm going to lose, and I'm going to have to pay it, you know? And that stuff's happening all the time. Dental care, dental insurance covers almost nothing. They shouldn't even call it insurance. They should call it teeth cleaning bill, because that's all you get for it, really. Whenever you get anything else, costs a lot of money.
Do you have to pay for cleaning now?
No.
I thought it was what?
That's 80, what I'm saying. 80%. No, that's what I'm trying to say. The dental insurance should be called like teeth cleaning and not much else or something, you know?
Yeah.
Because it doesn't pay for hardly anything. A simple filling, especially if you want to get a filling that's not filled with mercury, which the silver ones are, that costs extra money. They won't cover it. You know what I mean? It's just insane. It's just this country. You know, the fact that we haven't had a revolution yet is amazing. It means we really are brainwashed. It means we really are sheeple, you know? But then that's not good enough. You got to break that down and figure out why that is, you know? And there's reasons for it. And part of it is what we're getting into, the lack of political representation. Working people are not represented politically in this country. And now with Trump, the so-called left and parts of the real left have lost it. And they're ready to just buy into the Democrats yet again. Gee, we didn't learn from the 50s and 60s, 70s. We didn't learn from the Depression, World War II and after. We didn't learn, you know, going back to the late. There were labor parties and socialist parties in the 19-teens and into the 20s, you know. And there's all this history showing how horrible and racist, you know, the Democratic Party and the Republican parties were. How horrible economically they are and were. Go to cities dominated by Democrats, you'll see the worst, you know, homelessness and poverty you'll ever want to see in your life.
Washington D.C.
and and Democrats. Skid Washington D.C. So I'm talking to, talking with my wife Tina the other day, and she wanted some examples. And this was not a hostile thing; she agreed with me, but she just wanted some examples of Democrats that betrayed the $15 minimum wage thing. And there's so many examples, it's like unbelievable, but I just picked out a couple I had in my head. The mayor of Baltimore, a Democrat, you know, black woman, ran on partially on 15. The minute it passed, she vetoed it. a Democrat in Montgomery County, Maryland, a couple years ago. Now, since then, I think it's been brought in, but he vetoed it. He had some sort of special powers that allowed him to veto it. The Democratic-dominated city council in Washington, D.C. I'm just picking on Maryland for right now. You can take this to any state. Democratic Party-dominated Washington, D.C. city council. A referendum is passed by 65% of the voters to give more money to only food service workers, but that's still a start. You know, increase their wage. I think it was to 15. I have to double-check that, but it was to increase their wage. Mandatory, you know. And the businesses went nuts, of course, and they got the Democrats, who are their masters, you know, the businesses are masters of the Democratic Party, got them to, enough of them, not all of them, but got most of them to say, oh yeah, we're going to rescind this referendum. So think about that. A referendum is a direct vote of the people. Then you have their representatives, quote unquote, saying, we don't care about what your direct vote is. And even a huge majority, like for American politics, 65% is pretty big because big business has a lot of money and they can mess with people's minds really easily and get them to vote again. You know,
yeah, look what happened with that question with the nurses, yes or
yeah.
no?
Oh my God, yeah.
That
yeah.
was so.
Yeah, yeah.
You could get all the nurses were behind it. Yeah. Like, yeah. What?
Well, even some of the nurses got brainwashed at the last minute.
That too.
But you can get, in America, you can be freezing on the street and vote against heat. You know, you can be wet and vote down free towels or something. I mean, this is a crazy country. It really is. It's nuts. It's just nuts. You can be, I mean, they're going to do a number on Medicare for all. You can see it happening already. They're going to say, you don't want to give up your private health insurance, do you? See how that works? They make it seem like you're going to be
your fault.
Tossed. First of all, they make it seem like it's an individual choice, which, you know, we have very few choices of insurance in this country. And those don't work anyway. None of them work really well, or well. And then, and so they're framing it like you're going to lose your individual health care and be tossed into the wilderness of some sort of government run thing. And of course the government, no one likes the government because the government, you know, you pay all these taxes and the government doesn't do what it's supposed to do, even under capitalism. But we have no choice. I mean, I'm willing to roll. If you really want to put it to me, if that's how you want to look at it, I'll roll the dice, man. Because this is not working. I'll roll the dice. You can take away my insurance and I'll go for the government plan. Because if that doesn't come through, at least I know where I can go protest and at least I can get some, you know, tax the rich stuff going. And you know, with private health insurance, everyone's like, oh, it's just a private company, blah, 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 you know. So anyway, they're framing it in a way that's going to make it seem so dangerous and so risky. When all they could do was they could just say, okay, anyone on private health insurance will be subsidized fully for that insurance, or they can stay on that insurance until we have the government insurance fully functional. You can have both at the same time. Or we'll subsidize. We'll take up the entire cost of the private insurance for you in the interim transition period. There's a million ways to look at it where you could effectively eliminate private health insurance, but still say to people, you know, no, you can have your own doctor and all this stuff. And as we're working it out, we'll just take over these health insurance companies and you'll have the same sign and the same doctor and everything will be cool. And you don't have to worry. They're not going to do that. They're going to make it sound like you're going to jump off a cliff and maybe at the bottom of the cliff is going to be some government health insurance for you. And who knows what that'll be, right? That's how they're going to mess with this, right? But people are so desperate, including me, that we got to go for it. We got to go for it now, you know? But what would really be the best thing would be to have a political party, not just one individual who claims to be left or whatever, like Sanders or something, but have a political party that was, and this happened in other countries. Up in Canada, the New Democratic Party started in 1964 with that as one of their main programmatic things, was health insurance, national health insurance, and they have it. And it's much better, contrary to right-wing propaganda, much better than anything we have here, you know? So, of course, when you look at Britain or countries with health insurance, it's not static. It's how strong the people are, how much, whether they win it to begin with politically. They won it in Britain because they had a Labour Party. They didn't have just the Liberals, the Liberal Party and the Conservative Party. They had a Labour Party. When are Americans going to learn? You need that Workers' Party to get anything and to get it to be decent. You know, you can't rely on the Democrats because they're going to come in. They're going to not fight on this ultimately, or they're going to water it down like Obama did to where it's still. Obama actually made it worse. The Obama administration made it worse. They solidified, codified, legalized private corporations being the backbone, the total, actually not just the backbone, but the total universe of health coverage in this country. You have to go through. The government will actually set it up for you. States and the government will actually act as pimps for the corporations, you know? That's the wrong way of the relationship. Anyway, they will slide you into a corporate health care plan instead of using those resources, set up a government-run plan or a state-run plan or whatever. So the original point of all that was, look, what's left as far as independent class politics goes, meaning what's left as far as real politics for working people to the left of the corporate parties, the Democrats, the Republicans, and the Libertarians. What's left? Not a lot out there right now. That could change fast. And you can't wait until another round of supporting and strengthening the Democratic Party or the Republican Party or whatever, and then say, oh yeah, sometime in the future I'll be for an independent party, independent of big business. Doesn't work that way. You got to build it. Hard slog, hard fights, you know. And every penny you give and every bit of attention you give and every discussion where you defend lesser evilism, you're helping the status quo stay in power. You know, the Republican and Democratic parties, the corporate parties. So it turns out, on a local level, we have examples of socialists winning. And I'm not talking about DSA run as a Democrat stuff. That's not socialism. The minute you enter a corporate party, you give up your socialist card at the door. You just burnt it. That's fine. You want to come back and be a socialist later, I will accept. We'll accept you, you know. But while you're in the Democratic Party, you're not a socialist. And you're doing damage to socialism. And so leave aside DSA and all that garbage and look at real socialists out there. There were some victories from time to time in certain places. Richmond, California had some socialists, also some people that were doing the DSA inside, outside Democratic Party. I think we had some real independent socialists. And there's other examples. You have to dig for them, but they're there. Look around when you go to vote for an independent that's very progressive or a socialist that's running. And that does happen. And they do get elected sometimes. And it's very difficult. And the best example in recent memory, and there are left-wing Greens that run, like Howie Hawkins might run. There's a thing called Movement for a People's Party, or Movement for a People's Party, but last I've checked them out, they were being infiltrated by Sanders trolls, people that were trying to get them to move over to the Democratic Party. Whether they've done that, I don't know. I hope they haven't. There's also the, left Greens, like Howie Hawkins, before that, Jill Stein, that they use the Green Party ballot line, but they're really should be in a socialist party, and they're not.
Even Howie Jill Cox's Stein.
Example. Yeah. Yeah, she's pretty left wing. But
yeah, we met her once.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
At a lot of people. Mount Auburn Street.
Yep. A lot of people in Social Alternative have met her too. And the problem is that the Green Party is all over the map ideologically. You have some pro-capitalist Greens, you have some socialist Greens, and this and that. It really needs to be split. You know, you really, the left Greens really need to go and become socialists. They can call themselves eco-socialists or whatever. That's fine. Howie Hawkins does that. But stay in the Green Party is a joke, because if the Green Party ever got more powerful in the United States, it would probably follow the path of other Green Parties internationally, and they became pro-capitalist parties. They entered in coalitions with pro-capitalist parties. The problem is that even in countries in Europe where you have a bigger left and different parties you can vote for, sometimes people end up voting for Green because of the way things configure. They get down towards the end of the ballot and the left parties aren't doing so well or something, and they'll vote Green as a protest vote, not understanding that the Greens have already, in a lot of European countries, been in power and done the pro-capitalist thing and shouldn't vote for them. Here in the United States, the Green Party has no overall record of that, although there are individual examples of Greens that really like became Democrats after they got elected and stuff like that. So it's all over the map, but there are some truly left-wing Greens that deserve support. But other than those examples, you've got basically Shama Sawant is an outstanding example of an independent socialist. Originally, at least in 2013, they got elected and fought for $15 minimum wage and other demands, which we're going to get into in a minute, because she won re-election once, and now she's running for re-election again. Now, it gets a little complicated after that first election, where there are people in Social Alternative, I mean, it's policy of Social Alternative, actually, to also support Sanders. So the whole independent political thing gets a little muddy. In fact, to be honest with the listeners.
So is there a split now?
And also, well, not really. Mm. I mean, I don't support it. I'm in Social Alternative, but I'm in a minority position there. And a lot of the material that has been put out by Shama Sawant campaign, with a lot of, you know, influence obviously from Social Alternative and so on, is some of it's good and says, you know, you can't have two bosses, or you can't have two, I mean, you know, you can't go with big business and claim to also be with the people, that kind of thing. But also, there's stuff in there linking the campaign to Sanders and AOC and other Democratic Party liberals. So that's unfortunate in my opinion. But overall, the main thrust so far has been independent politics, you know, in a sense of independent from big business. Like Shama, we don't take any corporate money. Shama campaign doesn't take any corporate money. Shama Swan campaign, Shama has served already on a worker's wage and ran with that promise to begin with, and each election runs on that promise that if elected, she won't take any more than the average wage of the worker in her district. So Seattle City Council is now making like enormous amounts of money, like $120,000, $130,000. She's bringing home like 40-something or whatever. Anyway, so what we want to do is just point out that even in this election time of it seems like, and again, this could change very quickly, predominant lesser evilist mentality, you know, reform the Democratic Party mistake, the whole inside-outside strategy. Well, I'll be in the inside Democratic Party for now, and some other places I'll be outside the Democratic Party. This stuff, there are counterexamples. And Shama is running for re-election. So we wanted to, as we promised listeners last time, take a moment to look at what one, even just one socialist can do in a city council dominated by Democrats. And it hasn't been all victories because of that. But the way that socialists should use electoral politics, and the way that Shama Sawant campaign and Social Alternative has most of the time tried to organize around issues by simply mobilizing the people, mobilizing the voters, the people, non-voters too, to support something. So instead of just trying some backroom deal, we'll try to fill City Hall. We'll do occupations or sit-ins. We'll do all sorts of stuff. And or lead it or be part of it, you know. And that's worked pretty well, to the point where, as we've mentioned on the show before, the Democrats were going to sue Shama and Socialist Alternative. For, well, I guess they were going to sue Shama Sawant for for using, you're not going to believe this, and it never went to trial because how stupid it is.
Yeah, I remember. But the judge was like, wait a minute, I can't do that.
They got sick of us filling up this place in Seattle that's part of City Hall, filling up the City Hall chambers and this overflow room with people, like hundreds of people around issues. There's City Council, if you ever go to City Council meeting in any even big city in the United States, they're usually pretty dead because people realize they've got no power, you know? Like in Boston, you have no power because of the Democratic Party machine, but also the mayor, always a Democrat, has most of the power. They took away the power from the City Council. So the mayor appoints a lot of things that used to be either directly elected on or the City Council would appoint them. So you have power in one person's hands, basically. But in Seattle, you'd have some pretty lively City Council meetings with hundreds of people there fighting for when Sharma first got elected for $15 minimum wage. So I'm quoting here from a thing I got on email. Quote, 5 years ago, we made history from Sharma Sawant, Socialist Alternative. 5 years ago today, we made Seattle the first major city in the country to win a $15 an hour minimum wage. And that's true. First one that got it passed. Wow. We built the 15 Now campaign by bringing together a coalition of unions, community organizations, Socialist Alternative, and my city council office. Since that historic victory, the fight for 15 has spread around the country with workers winning in city after city and in seven entire states. We won, and this is what I was just getting into, we won because we took a fundamentally different approach of basing ourselves on the power of working people, not on negotiating backroom deals and selling for what was acceptable to big business. We won by having a movement and an elected representative in City Hall, which understood that fighting for working people, communities of color, and the LGBTQ community means standing up to big business and the billionaire class and being unafraid to make powerful enemies. Now, I do have to qualify this a little bit by saying that even in Seattle, where it turned out 15 Now became a huge campaign thing that propelled Sharma into office, partially, that was one of our demands, but it became the main demand. And the first election was pretty close. Re-election, less close. Sharma got a lot more votes. And because we had already won 15 by that time and led the fight to win 15. But the Democrats did get a hold of it at some point and watered it down. Now, the Seattle one is stronger than most cities and most states. When Sharma points out that other states have passed it, it's not really that good in a lot of states. You know, they've kept it to bring it in increments over a number of years where it's going to be where it's going to be like 20-something 2022 or something before you're even getting to 15, and meanwhile inflation goes up.
The cost of living goes up.
So it's become easy for Democrats to say they're for 15. Like Joe Biden claims he's for 15. Never lifted a finger for it. Sanders came late to 15 originally, has supported it since his last election thing, since the middle of his last election thing, campaign. But here's the problem. He was quoted yesterday. I heard the snippet of on the radio. He was quoted as saying 15 is a living wage. 15 now, nowhere in the country is a living wage. It's a step forward. It's a good step forward. It should be supported. It's not a living wage.
And I'll tell you, you know how I was making, $12, $11 if that, whether it was Whole Foods, whether it was wherever.
Yep.
Up until now. And you would think, I'm making more money now, but still, I'm still struggling.
Yep. There are some parts of the country where if you got 15 immediately, which is not, again, the Democrats tend to water these bills down, so it's not happening immediately. In Seattle, it happened immediately for tens of thousands of workers, but then it had to, even for more, it had to be, unfortunately, it came in increments. But there are some parts of the country where if you went from like $9-$10 an hour, even up in New Hampshire, to 15, it would make a big impact immediately. But in terms of a living wage, right, like housing, food, transportation, still doesn't do it, even in the poorer areas. Up in New Hampshire, they're talking about just raising it a little bit.
Let it go up in San Francisco and see how,
Places like Boston, San Francisco, New York, Seattle, for example, no, it doesn't work. You need more, and that's what, and we're still fighting for more. Anyway, then it goes on to say, a key lesson from our victory was that you can't serve two bosses at the victory of 15 5 years ago. You cannot be accountable to big business and to working people at the same time. As Seattle, because this is what Shama is, a Seattle city councilor, as Seattle increasingly becomes a playground for the rich, what's at stake this year is who runs Seattle, Amazon and big business or working people. So Seattle, in other words, is the headquarters of Amazon, Microsoft, other big corporations, Boeing, other big corporations. And what you have, this is like, if you need more proof that trickle-down economics doesn't work, look at Seattle, look at San Francisco, right? Homeless crisis, L.A., severe, severe homeless crisis. And despite these cities being extremely rich. Winning rent control for Seattle will take standing up to the wealthy developers, raking in record profits off sky-high rents and price gouging. Taxing Amazon, a big business, to fund tens of thousands of new affordable homes each year will require building powerful movements. Already corporate PACs, political action committees, have amassed an unprecedented war chest of $1 million with $200,000 from Amazon alone. Our enemies have made it clear that they want anybody but Shama Sawant for District 3 in Seattle. Why? Because they know that my office has not only been unshakably accountable to working people, but we've been incredibly effective. And that's true. Like, even the Amazon thing, there's this thing called the Amazon tax. Remember we talked about that? So it got passed, led by Shama. She got the Democrats to vote for it on the city council. Then Amazon started to get mad. And they started to yank the chains of everyone from some union leaders that thought if they begged Amazon for jobs, that's the best way to be. And the Democrats, of course, got their corporate chains yanked. And they all fell right into, except for one, they all fell right into obedience. And they voted down a tax they had just voted for in the last, I think it was 6 weeks or something. It's unbelievable retreat by corporate politicians, but not unexpected because they are corporate politicians. So Shama's running for re-election, and I got this thing that has a very good, same thing I was just reading from Socialist Alternative. It has a very good summary of what's been won. So I'm going to go through this really quick. And I can't read it all, but I'm going to have to pick and choose, but I'll do that as quick as I can. When I was first elected, our calls for 15 now were dismissed as impossible, but we brought together the coalition for 15 now, consisting of unions, community organizations, social alternative, and ordinary working people, to make Seattle the first major city in the country to win a $50 minimum wage. $15 an hour minimum wage. I already said that. We sparked a nationwide movement, which has won $15 an hour for entire states of California, New York, Illinois, Massachusetts, Maryland, Connecticut, New Jersey, plus the District of Columbia. 3 in 10 American workers now live in states which are raising their minimum wage to 15, in addition to millions of workers who have or are benefiting from victories for 15 from other significant minimum wage increases in cities and states across the country. Momentum for a nationwide 15 is growing. It has been adopted by the Democratic Party's official platform, although that hasn't stopped leading. Now, this is the thing where in a lot of material now from the campaign and from Social Alternative, it goes corporate Democrats. You know, that makes people think there's a whole other type of Democrat out there. They're all corporate Democrats to one extent or another. But anyway, from using their authority to block, delay, and dilute $15 an hour, even in one-party cities like Minneapolis, Baltimore, Chicago, meaning Democratic Party, one-party cities, Minneapolis, Baltimore, Chicago. So even there, they block, delay, dilute the $15 an hour minimum wage, whether it's referendums or whatever, or laws. Under pressure from workers organizing, huge employers like Amazon and Target are raising their wages to $15 an hour. The problem is, you can be part-time. No one ever talks. That's not even mentioned here. You can go to $15 an hour, but they can cut your hours, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. While the corporate media spreads propaganda about how 15 would make the sky fall in, I think mainly on a nationwide level they're talking about, but they even do that statewide, economic analysis has confirmed that what we said all along, that $15 an hour has resulted in the transfer of billions from the wealthiest CEOs to the lowest paid workers, especially benefiting women, people of color, queer and trans people who are more exploited under capitalism. I'm not sure they're more exploited, but they are horribly exploited. I think there's a certain point where everyone gets exploited in a bad way, but, you know, not everyone, but I mean a lot of people. Now here's where it gets into some other things besides 15. We've won a series of landmark renters' rights victories. The move-in fee cap, the Carl Hagelin law barring rent increases at substantial rental homes. This guy, Carl Hagelin, the landlord, it's actually called the Carl Hagelin law. He sued us saying that was defamation of character and everything, and he lost. He lost. It was so funny. He sued the Shama Sawant campaign, and he lost. for the Fair Chance Housing Bill.
Slumlord, right?
Yeah, total. Fair Chance Housing Bill to limit the use of criminal records in rental housing applications and allow requiring landlords to provide voter registration information to new tenants. And then they go on to, well, I'll just say one of them. The move-in fee law means that Seattle renters no longer need thousands of dollars just to move in, caps how much landlords can charge in non-refundable deposits, and requires them to offer a payment plan for move-in fees. So they have this thing in Seattle where they tacked on new fees that I don't know if they exist in Boston yet around here, but I never heard of them before. What's a move-in fee?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't exactly. Think, well, to be honest, knock on wood, I live in a place I've been for 26 years.
Yeah.
And no lease. This guy literally, someone told me, could just, bye-bye. I don't have a lease.
Tenant at will.
Exactly. But he hasn't done that. And he hasn't gone up on a rent as much.
Yeah.
I mean.
That's good.
That's why I'm still in Cambridge.
Right. Right.
You know? But this, how long is that going to last? That's
so
what
it's, but you usually move. You know, you do first month's rent, last month's rent.
Security.
What's security deposit. So that's 3 months.
Three.
But then there's sometimes a fourth or fifth thing. Like, sometimes you have the sometimes if you're going through a company or individuals, they charge you a fee for looking. What do you call that? There's a word for that, a phrase for that.
For just looking at the apartment?
For finding you the apartment. Oh, realtor's fee.
Oh.
Then you have, then if you're, sometimes you have other fees tacked on, but moving fee, never quite heard of that one. Let's see. We fought to stop, I'm again talking about Shama Sawant, Social Alternative and others. That have supported Shama Sawant, who socialist city councilor in Seattle, Washington. We fought to stop, and she's running for re-election now. We fought a third time. She was re-elected once already. We fought to stop the sweeps. That was sweep of homeless people. Like, this cops just run in and destroy all their tents and stuff and force them to run a part of the city. We fought to stop the sweeps and authorized and won funding for homeless encampments. We stopped the Seattle Housing Authority's Orwellian Stepping Forward public housing attack, which would have raised rents by 400%. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
That was right away when Shama was elected the first term. She discovered that, you know, sort of business as usual in Seattle was this housing authority that just would jack up rents like crazy, and they had this 400% rent increase ready to go. And
it was challenged
on public housing, and it was defeated completely because it was exposed. We exposed it and campaigned against it. We, meaning Shama Sawant campaign, Social Alternative, and others. And
it can be done. It's not this over.
No,
and
usually
die.
People don't hear about it
because
number one, it's public housing, and a lot of people aren't in public housing, so they don't care, or they're not taught to care. And number two, as I said, they always did it in secret before, and all of a sudden. Boom, it got the light of day because the socialists came in and said, no, this is wrong. 400% rent increase. That's going to force all the people out, a lot of people out. And also what it does, of course, is that they're going to take that public housing, they're going to gentrify it, they're going to turn it into housing for rich people and stuff, or just tear it down. Our office has supported, has supported, I can't read that, it's a typo. Anyway. We organized over 30 renters' rights boot camps to educate renters on their rights and get organized to fight for more. We played a central role in building momentum for rent control in Seattle, including organizing a rent control debate and passed a resolution calling on Washington State legislature to lift the statewide ban on rent control. Now, here's the deal, right? One of the main issues in Seattle right now is housing. And of housing, as part of that issue is the call that Shama is leading on for rent control. Like in Massachusetts, however, the bosses, the corporations, all of a sudden decided, completely nonsensically and arbitrarily, to make it a statewide vote. Why should it be a statewide vote? Rent control. You know? Statewide vote's the wrong term. Unless the entire state votes for rent control. You can't have rent control in any cities. That's what I meant. Yeah, so obviously this pits people in rural areas that don't know rent control or whatever, hoping they'll go out and vote against rent control in the cities. And so now, like in Massachusetts, once that was passed, rent control was automatically eliminated in all the cities, even where people had voted to keep it, and now you can't get it back a city-by-city basis. So imagine you want to get involved in a rent control fight and get rent control and realize you have to organize an entire state to be for it and how hard that is, you know? We've completely transformed the dynamic of City Hall, regularly bringing in, this is what I was talking about, regularly bringing in hundreds of working, ordinary working people for town halls and rallies to win major victories for working people. During my first year in office, we shattered a decades-long tradition during Seattle's budget season. Instead of using taxpayer money to attend a retreat hosted by Seattle's Corporate Chamber of Commerce, I called it out as a clear display of brazen corporate favoritism and organized our first annual People's Budget. Each year, we have fought back against police militarization and austerity policies from the corporate establishment, winning millions in funding for affordable housing and programs to prioritize racial, gender, and social justice, while at the same time demanding progressive funding choices. Through the People's Budget, we have won tens of millions of dollars in affordable housing, including fighting alongside the Block the Bunker struggle and launching the Build 1,000 Homes Coalition to stop the mayor and city council majority from wasting $160 million of public funds on further militarizing the police, instead winning $29 million for affordable housing. Funding for critical jobs programs, including expanding the LEAD program citywide, which district low-level offenders and community-based, which directs low-level offenders and community-based treatment and support services, doubling funding for Career Bridge, which helps prisoners transition into the reliable, well-paying jobs, and doubling funding for the Priority Hire program, which provides good youth jobs. So, like I said, I wouldn't have time to read all these, but I'm going to read a couple more. Important gains for the LGBTQ community, including funding for an LGBTQ senior center in the heart of Capitol Hill, funding for an LGBTQ wellness center at Nova High School, and a backfill against cuts. I don't know what that means. A backfill against cuts made by Major Jenny Durkin to services for the trans community. I guess they reestablished funding. Funding for the first eviction defense attorney in the city's history to provide ballot support for tenants facing evictions, as well as tenants education and organizing through organizations like the Tenants Union. Let's see. Permanent funding for Indigenous Peoples Day. They got rid of Columbus Day. They have Indigenous Peoples Day. Shama helped lead that. Millions in funding for crucial social services. Defeated a proposal to raise the salary of CEO, City Light CEO, I'm not sure what that means, to I think that's the power stuff. Raised that $120,000 a year, defeated that. And here's what I mentioned also, as a representative of working people, I take home only the average wage of a worker in Seattle. Using the rest of the $130,000 annual city council salary towards building social justice movements and supporting worker struggles. Whoa, they get $130.
$130,000?
Yes, per year, each city councilor, not Shama, she donates most of it back. We helped save the historic Showbox music venue from demolition by corporate developers, a victory we were fighting to make permanent, so they stopped that from happening so far. We played a key role in fighting against the displacement, which is pushing working people and small businesses outside District 3. We helped win $650,000 in funding for small businesses hit hard by 23rd Avenue construction. We're involved in struggles to save Saba, an immigrant-grown Ethiopian restaurant in District 3, and the Emotia Peace Center, a pillar of the Central District and Seattle's Black community. We're organizing with tenants against displacement from the Chateau Apartments, a Section 8 subsidized public housing unit in the Central District. We won an unheard-of concession with the development agency, Cadence Real Estate, offering $5,000 to each household in relocation assistance on top of their legal requirement. And we're fighting alongside Central District residents to defend the Central Area Senior Center and Bird Bar Place. Now, why do I go into these very local things? Because Shama is an open socialist and openly making statements on national events and statewide events and citywide events. The slander from the right...
She was also on TV, right? With Democracy Now.
Yep. The slander from the liberals, the Democrats, is that she's all her money's coming from out of state, which isn't true. It's been proven recently. Most of it's coming from in-state. And she's got more in-state money coming into her campaign than any other candidate. Not that there's anything wrong with it coming from out of state. That's perfectly legal. The other thing is that they say she only cares about like other issues. She doesn't care, but doesn't do enough for her constituents. She's not available enough and all that, which is a complete lie. But, you know, you say a lie enough, it sticks. So I'm mentioning all these local things that she's been involved with and helped lead the fight on. We're fighting for a public post office in the Central District, which has become a post office desert, and that was won. That post office has been reopened. We organized with seniors facing economic eviction by for-profit developers at the Halcyon Mobile Homes Park, winning an emergency moratorium, meaning stopping mobile park development, which we're fighting to make permanent so the people in the Mobile Homes Park don't have to move. Let's see, Indigenous Peoples Day I mentioned. Permanent funding for the celebration. let's see. We supported members of the Puyallup tribe and environmental activists in their fight against liquid natural gas fracking facility in Tacoma. We worked with environmental and indigenous rights activists to divest Seattle's budget from the Wells Fargo, one of the key investors in the Dakota Access Pipeline. Tax Amazon, I talked about. But what happened is, okay, so far they fought back, they successfully eliminated that tax, that modest tax on Amazon, right? But the word got out, especially when they overturned it after first voting for it. So San Francisco, they have a this Google tax thing, and they're proposing a three. And also, Amazon was stopped in New York from building a second headquarters. So there's repercussions for Amazon's bullying tactics that seemed to have won in Seattle for a time being, but didn't win in other places. We built the momentum to tax big businesses and the rich, and through the Trump-proof Seattle coalition helped win a historic tax on the rich in Seattle, which has unfortunately been tied up in the courts by big business opposition. Yeah, that happens all the time. And then there's a bunch of stuff on union solidarity, which and a lot of unions have endorsed the Shama Sawan campaign. And Shama herself was in a union. Seattle Education Association, I think, is her union. Let's see. I have to skip a bunch of these. I was the only city council member to vote against the new youth jail and the only council member to vote against the rollback of accountability in last year's police contract, which was recently ruled by Judge Robart to be in violation of important police accountability reforms. By coming out against police brutality, like Shama has and like others have, she is very much under attack now by the police, and they're using their influence to support the main person running against her. Let's see. There's so many on here, so many things that have been Shama has won or helped to win. I'll go through one more. We introduced a moratorium on coal and oil trains passing through Seattle neighborhoods. I've taken part in civil disobedience on train tracks in downtown Seattle to block oil trains and vocally opposed oil and coal trains and the proposed Cherry Point coal terminal. The organized opposition of environmental and indigenous activists ultimately led to the defeat of every proposed coal terminal in the Northwest Coast. When ordinary people get organized to fight back, we can win. So that was, I thought, important to talk about. As an example of independent political action happening right now. Again, some of the campaign gets tied into the Democrats in terms of at least rhetoric, at least talking about them on a national level, like Sanders and AOC. But as far as like, there's no corporate funding coming in. There's no Democratic Party funding coming in or anything. It's just, in my opinion, a mistaken policy to try to create like a progressive coalition with Democrats when you can do that without supporting them, without endorsing them. You just put forward, as has already happened, as I reported out, put forward a good campaign and good legislation, and they'll be forced to go along with it because it's so popular, you know? Any more than that, you can't really trust, you know? And there's been a lot of internal politics where the Democrats have stabbed us in the back, meaning Socialist Alternative and Shama Sawant running, trying to get broader support for mm-hmm. things like the Amazon tax or running some sort of progressive coalition in the broadest sense. And I wouldn't put the Democrats in a progressive coalition, but anyway, that's what's tried sometimes. So I think next time, we're going to have to do another next time. Look at the time.
Yeah.
We'll have to go back to that article on the world is finally. Okay. The world is
If time went so fast while I was working, you know.
No problem.
But it goes fast when we're having, you know.
Yeah. Too fast. The world is finally ready for Marxism as capitalism reaches the tipping point. The article we're going to dissect and go over from The Independent. We got to, again, postpone a little bit. Didn't have time to read from Labor's Giant Step by Art Priest, but check it out. There's a few chapters on the Roosevelt administration, both in terms of being strike breakers, but also just the myths about the New Deal. But just on the general question of independent politics that we started to talk about, I wanted to just give a couple quick quotes. There's a guy named Louis Proyect who writes a blog called The Unrepentant Marxist. He also writes for Counterpunch. It was funny. He also mixes up on Facebook a lot. Someone accused him of being pro-Democratic Party. He said, quote, are you kidding? There are thousands of articles about the need to break with the Democratic Party, including probably about 25 I've written myself. I'm not sure what format he's talking about. It might be Counterpunch or Marx Mail or something. If you're a Marxist, you must oppose capitalist parties. It was only the Popular Front, led by the Communist Party, that had self-described Marxists urging support for capitalist parties. Marx would never have gone along with that. And then he gives a quote here. I think I found this quote, actually, and tied it onto this. Quote, even when there's no prospect of achieving their election, the workers must put up their own candidates to preserve their independence, to gauge their own strength, and to bring their revolutionary position and party standpoint to public attention. They must not be led astray by the empty phrases of the Democrats. Now, that's small d Democrats here, because this is written by Marx and Engels. But it fits, right? And this isn't the only country that has called corporate political parties or pro-capitalist or pro-slave parties Democrat. Not the only country where they've been called conservative or liberals. You know, I mean, this was inherited from not a good place or places. Used from those. They must not be led astray by the empty phrases of the Democrats who will maintain that the workers' candidates will split the Democratic Party, again, small d, but fits, and offer the forces of reaction the chance of victory. All such talk means, in the final analysis, that the proletariat, the working class, is to be swindled. The progress which the proletarian party will make by operating independently in this way is infinitely more important than the disadvantages resulting from the presence of a few reactionaries in the representative body, meaning Parliament or Congress. If the forces of democracy take decisive action against the reaction from the very beginning, the reactionary influence in the election will have already been destroyed. This is by Karl Marx and Frederick Engels' address of the Central Committee to the Communist League. And that makes a lot of sense because, I mean, that last part, you really have to think about, they're saying that if you have a good movement, you can neutralize the most reactionary sitting politicians. Again, think of Nixon as one example. Right? Conservative, anti-communist, everything bad. He gets up there and his administration is forced to implement some of the most progressive social legislation we've seen recently. Hey. All right, we're out of time. I'm going to give you one more quote. We'll save it for next time. You've been listening to Socialist Alternative Radio, talking music from a working class, democratic socialist perspective. And what are our last words for the day?
Power to the people and keep your head up.
And we'll go out with... what will we go out with? Okay. You'll recognize the song, I think. Thanks for listening. We'll be back in a couple weeks. And check out socialistalternative.org. Check out Socialist Alternative Radio on Facebook. And take care. Yeah.